Oh, that's cute.
Is my head in it? Okay, I'm gonna slow. I missed you as last time.
Anyways. Hi, guys. So,
3, 2, 1.
Bop, bop. Beep, bada, bop. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Beaker Bros.
I am Sonia.
And I'm Janoonie.
Junie, how the heck are you?
It is, we're in the thick of it, as I like to say. December, everything is coming at us full speed, but we are thriving.
How was grad?
Good. Anticlimactic, just, you know.
Like, you walked across, you did your...
I did my little, and then I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah. Accomplished, I'm done. But yeah, no, yeah, good, yeah. Cool. Okay. Anyways, as you can tell, we cannot focus on one thing or one topic sometimes. And that kind of leads into our topic of this episode.
What a segue. So, whatever, we'll just dive into it. But
today's episode is going to be about ADHD. We'll be exploring it in the concept, in the aspect of academia and how it presents differently in men and women, and sharing some personal stories as well. To, I guess, just start us off with, what is ADHD? What does it even stand for? It's Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. It is a neurodevelopmental disorder in which patients present inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity. It has a global prevalence of approximately 5 to 15%, and is a common learning disability amongst children in Ontario, Canada. ADHD also has a multifactorial
etiology.
I cannot see. I don't have my glasses on. And can be exacerbated by environmental, social, genetic, and neurological factors. Its severity can be described as mild, moderate, or severe, depending on functional and occupational impairment. So globally, this
globally, it does affect quite a number of people. But what's interesting is also, fun fact, I was saying this before, I wrote that little blurb that we just read, I wrote it for a course. I'm taking a course called HRM 751, Observational Methods, which basically, observational methodology and health research methodology basically means that when you're conducting research, unlike RCTs, where you're like administering an intervention and you're changing some sort of aspect within the population, observational methods are just observing people. So this little introduction that I wrote about ADHD was just a protocol that I ended up writing for looking at the effects of physical activity participation amongst kids that have, or high school students that have ADHD, and how that affects executive functioning. So this episode ended up tying into work I ended up doing for a course, so it was kind of convenient. Anyway, so really good description. Janoonie, do you want to talk a little bit about, or actually, you know what, this part I can kind of dive into a little bit, just talking about some of the misconceptions and stigma surrounding ADHD in academic environments in particular.
Yeah.
So it goes without saying, with any sort of like neurological development disorder, ADHD is no exception to facing some sort of stigma or stereotypes associated with this sort of population. And, you know, speaking from personal experience, because I have ADHD, one thing that often affects me is my inability to, I guess, focus on specific tasks, but that I'm not interested in. But when I do get something that I'm interested in, I get really hyper-focused on it, and everything else sort of, like, blurs out. But one thing with ADHD is that there's a common misconception that when people aren't diagnosed with it, or people don't know that you have ADHD, you're perceived as being sort of lazy, and this perpetuates the stigma that individuals with ADHD lack motivation, which is like simply not true. Everyone is motivated in some capacity to do something, and because of like a neurological deviation from what is normal, I guess, what's going on in folks' noggin, that can sort of perpetuate you know, issues that surround like inattention and hyperactivity in different ways. So going back to that though, another sort of leading misconception is the assumption that ADHD only affects hyperactive children, leading to skepticism about its presence in adults. But this is, again, simply not true, because you know, anyone, regardless of age, can experience the effects and the symptoms associated with ADHD. But yeah, one of the really important things about ADHD is, and you know, being, you know, managing it, first receiving a proper diagnosis. So folks in Canada, or specifically in Ontario, you can get diagnosed by any, or by most healthcare providers. So like your family physician, mm-hmm. you can see a psychologist, you can see, I believe social workers now too can also diagnose individuals with ADHD. But another thing, another misconception that's also important to bring up is sort of going back to the idea of laziness. And by the way, these misconceptions I'm speaking of are mostly prevalent in boys. Women, sort of, the way that ADHD manifests can be different and seen differently. That's why women and girls are often underdiagnosed. But going back to things that both or multiple genders, I guess, can experience that's associated with ADHD is and using it as an excuse for underperformance. Like, for me, for example, when I was growing up, I always felt like I had to, like, I was never stupid. Like, I worked really hard.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
I've always had to work, like, 10 times harder to achieve the same level of competency that is perceived by my other, or not perceived, I guess, like, that other peers are capable of. And, yeah, I'll talk more about personal narratives after and how, I guess, that
has impacted
me, and then how it ended up impacting my performance a lot in university, especially in the early couple of years when I didn't have any management or treatment strategies.
But I was just gonna jump in and be like, I don't know if you've like looked into this, or I'm not quite sure, because okay, so we talked about ADHD and what it is, but I guess just from my like geekiness in physiology and whatnot, is there any difference in the physiology of an ADHD brain versus someone without ADHD?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. So, first of all, like going back to the etiology that we discussed before, there's a lot of things that can exacerbate the symptoms that come about it. But one of the most common things that people attribute to being a reason for ADHD is how do you explain this? Lately. So there's these neurotransmitters called, there's these chemicals in your brains called, what are they, like catecholamines?
Catecholamines, yeah.
And so, for example, like dopamine and serotonin. Mm-hmm. And studies have shown that those neurochemicals, those chemicals in your brain, there's less of it in people that have ADHD compared to like the average population.
So those connections aren't being made as often as an individual who doesn't have ADHD then.
Yeah, but one thing that's interesting and why I ended up doing a project that was that I pitched for my course is because so the common way, before we get into I guess more about the personal narratives and looking at it in women, so the common way of treating ADHD is either through behavioral therapy, mm-hmm. so learning strategies to keep yourself on track. Like a common issue with folks that have ADHD is lack of organization, and it always feels like, how do I word this? Like my brain has a bajillion things going on, and there's no way for me to file it in my head. That's how it constantly feels like. But when you engage with behavioral therapy and also common medication, so there's different types of medication that are commonly prescribed for folks that have ADHD. Some are like amphetamines, and I forget the other category of medication. But fun fact, so like the same medication is often used to treat a bunch of different types of neurological disorders. So like the medication I sometimes take, don't need to get into that now. But the medication that I sometimes take is called Vyvanse, and that's sometimes also used for people that have bulimia.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I guess like in a state of like, okay, like neurological like disorders, like you mentioned before, there is connection to neurotransmitters, and maybe medication does play a role in mm-hmm. neurotransmitters, and it's hard to, like, there's not a lot of neurotransmitters in our body, right? There's like one that does everything sometimes and whatnot, so it makes sense for this medication having overlap different like other disorders, mm-hmm. which makes sense because if that's what you're targeting for the neurotransmitters, that makes 100% sense. Yeah. But it's actually really interesting to put in perspective because I feel like not many people know that, thinking medication is for something specific.
Yeah, and another interesting thing, so those are like the two main things that your family or your physician, obviously like speak to your own healthcare provider, but at least from my experience, my physician has encouraged. But what's not often encouraged is engaging in physical activity. But there's...
Oh! Well, no,
actually, let me reword that. So
don't exercise.
Obviously, like, your physician's going to tell you to exercise, but engaging in physical activity is not necessarily seen as a, like... How do I word this? Like, it's not one of the things that your doctor will say, like, hey, to fix your, or, like, to address your ADHD, go be active. But there's actually a lot of emerging literature, especially amongst kids and adolescent populations, so high school kids,
yeah.
that engaging in, through engaging with exercise, that helps regulate your catecholamine levels.
Okay.
In your brain. And that, in turn, can help improve executive functioning and the symptoms associated with ADHD. So, like, it's interesting how, man, physical activity can not cure necessarily, but, like, it has a protective effect against a lot of different...
I was going to say, it's not a cure, mm-hmm. I'd say, but it's protective and, like, preventative sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or
I guess, like, managing certain, I don't know, health-related things. But it's so interesting.
Yeah. Huh. I did not know that. That's actually really interesting. So, your physician said not to?
Oh, he didn't say not to. Yeah. Sorry, I should, like, take that back. But
yeah.
It wasn't, like, something that was said to... Like, it just wasn't said. Like, the two things that your... that physicians, like, at least for me, have told me are medication,
mm-hmm.
your prescribed medication, and you're told to go to therapy. So those are the things that are said, not necessarily like, oh, by the way, like, physical... obviously, your doctor's always going to tell you to be active, but being active is not seen as a... as pertinent of a management strategy for ADHD as meds,
mm-hmm.
like pharmacological interventions and therapy.
Okay, so we've talked about ADHD and just the different therapies and even how physical activity is not necessarily one of the major, I guess, therapies for ADHD. But can we talk about your personal experience, I guess, with that? I feel like just from my perspective and your perspective, I kind of want to know, like, what does a day in the life look like for you? Like, you wake up in the morning, what do you, like, what's your first thought? Like, or what are your thoughts?
Me and my smooth brain.
Yeah.
Lack of folds. So, where do I begin? So, actually, let me tell you, like, my experience from the beginning and how I didn't realize, like, my experiences and what I was navigating was ADHD.
Yeah.
And then how, I guess what my life was and then what it is now.
Yeah.
So, like, in university and... just, like, throughout my childhood, I guess, I thought, not to diminish my parents or anything like that, but the stereotypes that we mentioned before related to ADHD weren't, like, it was very, present in my parents' understanding of what ADHD is. So, like, I remember very clearly when I was growing up, there's this one South Park episode where, they were talking about ADHD and how, like, a lot of kids have ADHD, but it's like, no, you don't have ADHD, you just need to focus more. So,
yes,
like, not to say, like, every kid needs to be medicated, that's not the answer, and there's a lot of other treatment strategies outside of, like, pharmacological interventions, which should be more encouraged, like physical activity, like we spoke about before. But I always just thought, like, my inattention and just, like, my ability to work and be productive and everything else was just, like, simply a matter of my incompetence and my anxiety and just me functioning. And because of that, like, I had to work so much harder just to do, like, as decently as some of my peers. But in elementary school, my grades were utter shit. Like, I didn't, like, I didn't really care and I didn't focus until I ended up switching schools. But yeah, so even in, like, the beginning of university as well, I didn't really know what ADHD was. I just thought I was an anxious person, and I ended up getting student accommodations to help manage that with test-taking, so I'm able to, like, focus when I'm writing a test, or focus when I'm sitting in class, or focus when I'm doing, like, XYZ, like, work-related tasks. But then I ended up, so this, I was only diagnosed, like, earlier this year. There was someone that worked in the lab that I used to work with that has ADHD, and she was like, you know what, I encourage you to, like, navigate this a little bit more and, like, seek out, like, just speak to your family physician about, okay. Like, ADHD.
Yeah.
And, so went and spoke to my doctor. Also, one thing growing up as well, like, my teachers thought I, like, my parents had a number of conversations with my teachers about me either being, like, very dyslexic or, like, having ADHD. Like, I could not focus and spell for shit. Like, even right now, I read at a reading level and a pace that's, like, very slowly.
Okay.
Like, I read, like, anytime you talk about your reading and your ability to, like, because... you know you're smart, but anytime you talk about it, I'm just like, that is absolutely nuts. My brain does not allow me to do that. Like, growing up, my reading level in high school was so much lower than everyone else. I could always write, but my reading level was very, very low.
I was gonna be like jumping into my, I guess, to show a contrasting view, like, my reading thing. Like, I was able to pick up a book and I was able to read. Like, I don't think I've had that experience of being, like, struggling to read, and I can't imagine even, like, that.
Like, I was not able to sit down and read. Like, for example, studying for the MCAT, like, I genuinely thought when I first tried studying for it, I was incapable of studying for the MCAT because I could not focus and sit for longer than, like, 30 minutes without me being like, I don't understand this. Like, I am, like, I know I'm not stupid, but I just felt stupid because I couldn't do it. But then I got medicated, and then that, I remember the first time I took ADHD medication, and it was, like, genuinely, I sobbed because it was the first time, like, going back to what I was saying before, where I can't put things in boxes and organize my life normally. Like, the first time I took medication, I was like, oh my god, so this is what it means to, like, function properly.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I feel like I don't like taking the medication, as obviously everyone's experiences are different.
Yeah.
But when I take it for, like, a prolonged period of time, I have, like, just being social and stuff like that is a lot more challenging for me. Like, I feel like I just can't talk to people. But that also comes with, like, trying to navigate what an appropriate dosage for me for the medication that I was, or am taking. But just to go back to, like, what a day-to-day life looks like for me now. So, depending on, like, the intensity of the day, also, ADHD medication is not covered by OHIP, so it's a little expensive.
Oh.
So I try not to, like, take it unless I need to.
Yeah.
But, like, for now, but when I do take it, it's essentially, like, the same as any other day. I just, like, take the medication. Again, everyone's experiences are different, so speak to your doctor. But, like, I can't have caffeine because that also reduces the potency of the medication. What else? Yeah, literally, it's the same thing. I just don't have caffeine. And I have to... It also, one of the things with taking that type of medication, it promotes... Like, it's common to, one of the reasons why it's probably prescribed for bulimia is because my appetite when I take it, like, I have no appetite for the day.
Oh.
Yeah, like, I'm not hungry at all, so one of the things that my doctor told me when I was first starting the medication is, like, you have to make sure that, like, at, from, like, 12 to 12:30, whenever you have lunch, like, you're eating. Because you're not going to feel like eating, but it's very important that you do. Because obviously then that, like, one of the symptom, or what's it called, the negative side effects of it is, anorexia, if you're not, like, managing your diet and everything. But, yeah, like, a day is just like any other day, but just me being very organized and me recognizing that I have to do certain things and manage my life in a certain way in order for it to be productive.
So it's like more effort, like more intentional effort, I think.
Yeah.
When it comes to, like, organizing.
Yeah. Intentionality is perfect word to describe it. Yeah.
Oh. Because I'm, like, thinking, like, when I start my day, I'm like, okay, like, I gotta do this, 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 and I just go about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there's no me being like, okay, Janune, you have to, like, get up and go do this. You have to do this. Or, like, I think I'm fortunate enough, I could say, by being like, there's effort, but yours has so much more intention and so much more grit to it, I guess is the right word. Like,
I guess. It's just, I think intentionality describes it. Like, I just need to be, and when I don't do that, that's when I see my life, maybe spiral's not the right word, but, like, what's the word? Just behaviors that I engage in and are not, like, productive for me.
Okay.
And I have a very high propensity to engage in those, like, non-productive behaviors, I guess. So, yeah, I just have to be very intentional with what I'm doing and how I'm focusing.
Just to kind of, like, segue into the next part of it and kind of, like, thank you for sharing that. Very much appreciate that. You shared your experience having ADHD as a woman. What we know ADHD as is what it presents like in men. Can we maybe explore like how that differentiates from men versus women and how, what maybe what are some notable differences in the prevalence and diagnostic patterns between them?
Mm-hmm.
From what I know, like as I mentioned before, historically ADHD has perceived as predominantly male condition, leading to potential undiagnosis or misdiagnosis in females. There's also how shows that the research actually shows that the prevalence of ADHD is roughly equal between men and women, but females are often diagnosed less frequently. And this undiagnosis in women may be attributed to the fact that ADHD symptoms can actually present differently. And this is not the first, I guess, neurological disorder that does occur. There's so many other disorders out there where it presents differently between females and males, but females go, I guess, like, what, 20 or so years in their life without knowing that they may have such disorder and think normalizing it just because it doesn't present the same as men do.
Mm-hmm.
So in men, I guess we can start off with that, ADHD symptoms are often characterized by hyperactivity, impulsivity, and externalized behaviors, which are more overt and aligned with traditional diagnostic criteria. On the other hand, women with ADHD may exhibit internalized symptoms such as inattention, disorganization, and emotional dysregulation, making their struggles less conspicuous, why can I not say that word, and leading to overlooked diagnosis. Can you resonate with that in any way?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, just the like, if I don't, how do I word this without seeming like, for lack of better words, like a dick? Like, if I don't, I feel like a lot of, this is probably like a common thing that everyone shares, but like genuinely, if I don't care about what's going on, I'm not gonna focus on you. I'm gonna look at you, I'm gonna space out, and I'm not gonna pay attention.
Yeah.
So just like,
it's not personal.
Yeah, I do it with everything and everyone. So I'm just inattentive, I'm disorganized. And emotional dysregulation, like, I don't think that's, well, at least for me, I'm just like a very, like, flat. I mean, I guess that has to do with emotional dysregulation. Like, I'm never high, I'm never low. I'm just like constantly.
I was gonna say baseline, but maybe baseline's not the best word to use.
Yeah, like, I feel like you've known me for long enough. Sometimes I guess you see me at like polar opposite spectrum, but like 99% of the time I'm just like I am the way that I am.
Yes. I know what you mean. I guess to kind of further talk about the differences that societal expectation and gender norms may actually contribute to the under-recognition of ADHD in women, as they may internalize their difficulties and employ coping mechanisms that actually mask the condition. I think that's really important to kind of emphasize. But the evolving understanding of ADHD in different genders actually emphasizes the importance of recognizing diverse presentations and tailoring diagnostic criteria to ensure accurate identification and support for individuals regardless of gender. I think that is where medicine and research is kind of leading to, knowing that what we know medicine as is from the very, very, I think, common symptoms, common presentations, but there's so many individual differences, but also differing in different populations, that I guess the best way to say is further research needs to be conducted to know how these actually present differently in individuals. And there's not one way of kind of symptoms presenting itself.
Yeah.
Or a disorder presenting itself.
Yeah, it goes back to that episode, like one of the first episodes that we did about healthcare and sex and gender differences. Like, even like when you look at cardiovascular disease and how like heart attacks present in men versus women, like it's different. Or stroke is like, well, like the a lot of that's sort of consistent, but like going back to heart attack in particular, like that manifests, or not manifests, but what am I trying to say, it presents differently. So I think you summarized that very well. With that being said, that wraps up today's episode.
Thank you guys for listening, as always.
See you next time.
Bye.